Hey, good day to you. Happy Wednesday. This is Kim Harden, and I'm reading the Decatur Herald and Review for you today on Wednesday, August 5th, 2026. I'd like to start with the weather. Today is the regional outlook, clouds and sun today. Expect 4 to 8 hours of sunshine with an average relative humidity 70% and fair drying conditions. A couple of showers and a heavy thunderstorm tonight. Chance of precip 100%. It's going to be 86 is your high today and 69 tonight will be the low. Thursday, similar, humid with a thunderstorm. And a high of 80, 67 the low. Friday, humid and thunderstorm, 85 and 70. And Saturday, looks like it'll dry out a little bit, partly sunny and humid with a high of 87 and a low of 69. I'll get you started with the front page. It's back to school. Dansby students ready to soar. Written by Valerie Wells. Orientation helps incoming sixth graders adjust to middle school. Allison White's mom thought ahead to one of the potential challenges of middle school. My mom taught me how to open a combination lock over the summer, said Allison, who's entering sixth grade at Dansby Magnet School on August 12th and will have a locker for the first time. Going to middle school is a big adjustment. Changing classes, having lots of different teachers, and of course, the locker, are all the reasons that Dansby held a middle school orientation day, bringing their veteran students like Allison, who are going to middle school, and all students who are coming from another building. Dalise Burden is one of those new students. He attended Parsons School last year. I'm nervous about everything, said Dalise, who is also going into sixth grade. You worry about your classes and you worry about your work. I just want to do well. Each student received a Dansby planner, which includes helpful hints on each page, like how to handle bullying, places to write their assignments each day, a bathroom pass in the back, because one of the new things about middle school is not having scheduled bathroom breaks where the whole class goes at once. During the orientation, when Assistant Principal Nicole Long had covered seemingly every angle of middle school, one student asked about recess. There is no recess, Long said. You're in middle school now. There were more than a few fallen faces at that prospect. Knowing that the youngsters will be a bit overwhelmed the first few weeks, the rules about 3-minute passing periods and tardiness and such will be relaxed to give them time to adjust, said Assistant Principal Courtney Settles. The students have trouble with everything, he said. It's a huge change bouncing between classrooms after spending all day in the same classroom in the lower grades, he said. Learning 7 classrooms, learning all of the different personalities of the teachers, trying to find their way, and now they're with the 7th and 8th graders. It's a big change for every 6th grader I've ever seen. He told students that after a short period of adjustment, they will be counted tardy if they don't make it to class on time. The staff has tested the distances between classes, and 3 minutes is enough to get where they're going. I'm a chubby guy, and I don't move very fast, he said. If I can do it, you can do it. Principal Rita Ellis told the group that there's a lot of responsibility that comes with moving into middle school. They're expected to do more on their own. They'll be sorted into houses and eligible to apply for flight team, which is a leadership position. But that means that even now, before school starts, the staff is watching students' behaviors and attitudes to decide who will make a good leader. Not everyone does. And it means a fresh start, she said. Whatever happened last year, whatever happened over the summer, it's over, she said. Tony Reed writes about an infrastructure project. Decatur Council eyes ADM water use. City Water Survey says rates fair, but questions loom over industry deal. City Council members got an in-depth report plumbing the fairness of cost sharing among businesses and residential customers of the city's water distribution system. City Manager Melissa Hahn's conclusion was upbeat and buoyant after taking a deep dive through the report's 19 pages of analysis, calculations, and usage tables. The distribution of costs across customer classes appears equitable, she told council members on Monday. The declining block structure in which the unit price of water goes down as water use goes up appears to work well for the city, and the report, compiled at the council's request by hired experts, Raftellus Financial Consultants, Inc., also appears to broadly support Hahn's reading of it. Overall, the city's rate structure reasonably recovers costs from the appropriate customers, it said. There are, however, some strong cross-currents of unease. Raftilis noted that Archer Daniels Midland Company's thirst for raw, untreated water runs to more than 6.5 million CCF a year, a measurement of raw water usage. One CCF is about 748 gallons, so that 6.5 million figure works out at 4.86 billion gallons. ADM pays a rate of 0.3618 per 1,000 gallons, and it gulps down and also kicks in a $1 million contribution for a total payment of $2.8 million, which Raftilis said is about 22% of the city's supply costs of $12.3 million. The consultants did float the idea that if ADM was billed instead of at a revised rate based on a proportionate basis, the company would be on the hook for paying 46% of those water supply costs. ADM's water contract with the city doesn't expire until 2037. However, and Raftilis said that would be a good time for a reappraisal of how the thirsty industrial titan gets charged. When the agreement expires in 2037, the two parties will need to determine a rate and rate setting approach, which could change the relative cost recovery, it suggested. One council member urged that discussion to be happening a lot earlier. However, Councilman David Horn said a city with a high residential poverty rate has been and still is effectively subsidizing the water bill for a highly profitable commercial enterprise, and that needed to change. He said the city must switch to the charging system that was more closely based on how much water a customer used. Horn said that given ADM is drinking down 46% of Decatur's overall water consumption and the city's water supply related costs are $12.3 million, ADM should be paying $5.7 million per year instead of the $2.8 million it currently pays. That roiled the waters of Monday's meeting, with Mayor Julie Moore Wolf claiming there is a much deeper issue at stake than just looking at what ADM pays for the unprocessed water it sucks out of the lake. "The whole reason we have Lake Decatur is because of industry," she added. A.E. Staley Manufacturing Company threatened to leave Decatur if we didn't have the lake. The lake was built because our forefathers had the foresight to say this is a resource we can have to grow our community, and that is why Archer Daniels Midland came to town. It is one of the great economic development tools that we have. Directing her comments at Horn, the mayor continued, "I know you don't have background or experience in economic development, but I've been doing it for 30 years, and water is a huge resource for us. Yes, it's important that we protect that resource, that we make sure it is a clean and safe drinking water source for our citizens, but it is also how we improve the lives of our citizens, because the only way to get people out of poverty is to help them rise up to get better jobs." More council members also circled in for the attack and in defense of ADM's current water deal. Councilwoman Lisa Gregory invited Horn and anyone else curious about post-industrial decline to go take a long look at Danville, which she said has the economic heart ripped out of it when its General Motors plant packed up and drove away. "I encourage any one of you that are driving through Danville to stop just a minute and see what's there. Not a lot," she added, "and the reason there's not a lot is because they lost their biggest industry. ADM has 4,000 employees that live in the city of Decatur." Councilman Pat McDaniel said ADM has spent a lot of money over long years to help support Lake Decatur improvements, but he says throwing rhetorical water bombs at the company isn't likely to make them feel welcome to stay here. "You keep griping about them, and they're going to leave," he warned. "Then what are you going to do? You'll gripe to the council that we don't have any jobs." Horn's position was looking increasingly isolated, but he did get some support from Councilwoman Consuelo Cruz. She said civic leadership in Decatur has pandered to industry and flowed to its will for years, but a rising tide of profitability hasn't lifted all the boats. "Poverty has increased over that time," she said, "so this is not working to reduce poverty. I think we should let industry argue their point, but elected officials should be advocating for the people." That prompted the mayor to hit back by saying, "I'm advocating that they have jobs and that we help secure those jobs and bring more here and have good jobs. ADM did have a representative at Monday's meeting, and while he did not speak directly on the issue of how much it is fair for his company to pay for water use, he did address the issue of working together to protect and enhance the city's water supply. ADM and the City of Decatur have long shared a strong partnership centered on protecting and sustaining Lake Decatur, a critical resource for both the community's drinking water supply and the region's economic vitality, said Jim Hoyt, Director of Decarbonization Value Chain Development for the firm. Recognizing the mutual dependence on the lake, ADM has consistently collaborated with the city in significant investments to maintain and improve its long-term health and reliability. Decatur's story has always been one of people coming together to build something that lasts. Lake Decatur stands as one of the most important examples of that vision, and ADM is proud to be a part of that story. Continuing with Lake Decatur news, Tony Reed also writes, the city advances boat ramp revamp. A $794,000 project to upgrade and replace Decatur's Nelson Park boat ramp got a bon voyage unanimous vote from the City Council. Council members signed off Monday on the project, which will see the existing and crumbling individual ramps being closed after September 14th to allow construction to get underway. City Manager Melissa Hahn said work should be mostly done by the end of the year, and a grand reopening is penciled in for April 1st. Hahn said Lake Decatur users had been polled on the ramp design they wanted, and the coming project was their overwhelming choice. The improvements will include replacing the existing ramp with a longer and wider launching lanes to better accommodate today's boats and trailers, improve launching efficiency, and enhance overall boater safety, Hahn told the council. As part of the project, of the existing docks will be replaced with new floating ADA-compliant docks that are consistent with the recently upgraded marina dock system. The upgraded boat ramp will also better support large community events held on Lake Decatur, including national boat races and fishing tournaments. Hahn noted the existing ramp complex dates back to the 1960s, and the adjacent concrete docks are also in rough shape. In remarks before Monday's meeting, Councilman David Horn wasn't sure if he was fully on board with the project. However, he wondered whether splashing $750,000 on a new boat ramp and docks was the best use of that kind of money. Horn noted the city revenue from boat and dock registrations has been trending down. In 2024, the city made $241,371, but that dropped to $214,817 in 2025. The city manager blamed the drop on what she described as the removal of the Nelson Park boat clubs during adjacent construction work. And yet, while expensive, Horn said he was pleased that the final cost of the ramp revamp was far less than originally forecast. Initial engineer estimates had pegged it at more than $1.5 million, but the winning bid from Decatur-based Entler Excavating Company at $794,511.38 undercut that estimate by 48%. Horn described this as good news, and after chewing the issue over, he voted with his colleagues to approve the project. Turning now to national news, Reuters writers Aaron Bianco, Mike Stone, and Jonathan Landay write, source, key missile arsenal tapped out. War in Iran burned through munitions. The U.S. Army used up much of its stockpile of highly accurate long-range missiles during its five-month war with Iran, according to three people familiar with the data, raising concerns about the military's readiness for future conflicts. The missiles are principally the Army's surface-to-surface weapons, known as Army Tactical Missile Systems, or ATACMS, and Precision Strike Missiles, or PRSM. The U.S. used virtually all of these weapons, according to two of the sources. The degree to which the military is running out of ATACMS and precision strike missiles has not been previously reported. The long-range munitions, which cost more than $1 million each, are an important part of the military arsenal, allowing accurate strikes from a safe distance. U.S.-supplied ATACMS played a key role in the war in Ukraine, allowing Ukrainian forces to attack targets inside Russia. The PRSM is a newer, more advanced generation that will replace the ATACMS, which have a shorter range. The dramatic rundown in precision long-range missiles means U.S. President Donald Trump may have to rely more on riskier piloted bombing missions if he relaunches large-scale attacks on Iran. The sources declined to say how many of each munition the U.S. had left. Trump launched the Iran war jointly with Israel in February, predicting that the conflict would last a short time. As the war drags on, the three people familiar with the matter expressed worry that the falling missile supplies could limit the U.S. ability to deter adversaries, including Russia and China. A fourth person familiar with the matter said while Central Command, which oversees U.S. forces in the Middle East, nearly used up the land-based missiles it had before the war began, it had been able to reload from U.S. military supplies elsewhere in the world. The sources interviewed for this story spoke on the condition of anonymity. Asked for comment on the stockpile data, the White House issued a statement from Trump claiming the U.S. had far more munitions than anyone in the world and far more than we need. Analysts agree that certain munitions, including artillery shells and several types of missiles, are being produced at record levels, but caution that supplies might fall short of what is needed for prolonged war. Lockheed Martin, which makes the ATA CMS and PRSMs, along with the anti-ballistic missile THAAD system, did not immediately respond to questions about Trump's statements or about supply levels. Raytheon, which makes Tomahawk missiles and Patriot interceptors, two important U.S. weapons, also did not immediately respond. Responding to a request for comment, Chief Pentagon spokesperson Sean Parnell said, America's military is the most powerful in the world and has everything it needs to execute at the time and the place of the president's choosing. We have executed multiple successful operations across combatant commands while ensuring the U.S. military possesses a deep arsenal of capabilities to protect our people and our interests. The supply figures have circulated inside the federal government over the last week during tense conversations inside the Trump administration about how much longer the U.S. can continue striking Iran without drawing down the stockpile to levels that would limit the military's ability to respond to crises elsewhere. Supply warnings. One of the sources said the drawdown of the ATA CMS and the PRSM stockpiles reflected a decision by the Trump administration to avoid riskier ways of attacking Iranian targets, such as by using piloted aircraft to drop bombs. Because these weapons allow the military to attack targets from a distance, analysts say they would be valuable in a war against an adversary with strong air defenses, such as China. They have been used to strike targets inside Iran, according to a March report by the Center for Strategic and International Studies. According to the report, PRSM stockpiles were low to start with, since it is a relatively new munition, but the U.S. military ordered a large number of them for 2027. The Army says ATA CMS are being phased out and that production is shifting to the newer PRSM missiles. Military leaders for weeks warned the president that stockpiles of defensive weapons, including Patriot interceptors, which are effective against ballistic missiles, were dwindling, said two of the sources. Last week, several media outlets reported Trump had decided not to launch another massive offensive inside Iran, in part because his military advisors had warned about the U.S. stockpile. A U.S. official disputed those accounts, saying Trump chose not to move forward with another attack because of pressure from Gulf states. The Middle East conflict has sparked intense debate about Trump's authority to prosecute hostilities against Iran without congressional authorization. No request for a declaration of war or an authorization to use military force has been submitted to Congress. Defensive weapons. Last week, the Center for Strategic and International Studies published a report estimating that between February and July, about 65% of Patriot interceptors had been expended and that the number of THAAD ballistic missile interceptors in U.S. stockpiles was at least 38% lower than that at the start of the war. Patriots and THAADs, THAADs, are systems that detect and destroy incoming missiles and are among the most effective in the country's arsenal. While Reuters has not seen the supply figures, those numbers match internal U.S. data to of the sources said. The U.S. also burned through a little less than half of its global supply of Tomahawk cruise missiles since the start of the war, one of the sources said. Reuters could not independently verify this number. In other world news, Reuters writers title this story, Seeking Straight Answer. Oman proposes plan to manage Hormuz, charge voluntary fees. Oman delivered a proposal to Iran envisaging regional management of the Strait of Hormuz and only voluntary fees for transit rather than Tehran's vision of maintaining control of the waterway and charging for its use. Control of the narrow waterway between the Persian Gulf and the Indian Ocean, which is the main route for about a fifth of the world's oil supplies and other vital goods, is a main sticking point in efforts to resolve the U.S.-Iran war. What's in the plan? A Gulf source and a Western diplomat told Reuters the proposal was submitted to Iran in July during talks in Tehran. The proposal is for a joint regional mechanism to manage the strait with voluntary fees to help fund the costs of managing navigation, environmental protection, search and rescue, and other services. It's based on existing arrangements for the Strait of Malacca, which links the Indian Ocean to the Pacific, where Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore ask ships to pay a voluntary contribution for services. Why was it proposed? Iran closed the strait between the Iranian and Omani coasts after the war began February 28th with U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran. As the conflict continued, Iran asserted what it calls a sovereign right to manage the strait and collect fees for services alongside Oman. An interim ceasefire deal that Iran and the United States agreed on in June gave Oman a role in determining arrangements for the strait. That agreement said Iran would conduct dialogue with Oman to define the future administration and maritime services in the strait, in discussion with other Gulf states and in line with international law. However, while Oman spoke with Iran, its only public intervention was guidance issued in June for vessels transiting the strait through its waters that did not require fees. What does Iran want? Iran wants a permanent peace deal to allow Tehran to demand fees for ships passing through the strait. It did not specify how a fee structure would work. An Iranian official told Reuters before the interim truce that it would depend on factors including the type and size of a ship, its cargo, and other unspecified conditions. Iran regarded vessels' efforts to transit the strait near the Omani coastline during the ceasefire as a violation of the terms of the truce and fired on them. It says all ships passing the strait must liaise with a new Persian Gulf Strait Authority and that it's set up to administer transit. Senior Iranian officials say formalizing Tehran's control over the strait is now the most important goal in its approach to the conflict. What does Trump want? After the ceasefire broke down in July, President Trump said Washington would charge for use of the Strait of Hormuz, seeking 20% of the value of all cargo shipped. That declaration in a social media post appeared to contradict his own earlier statements, as well as those of other senior officials in his administration, that Hormuz transit should be free. Trump later said nobody should charge a fee for using the strait, while adding he thought it unfair the U.S. should have to pay for protecting the waterway. Are fees legal? The strait is made up of territorial waters of Iran and Oman, with the maritime boundary running along the middle. The United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea says states bordering straits cannot demand payment simply to pass through. However, they can impose limited fees for specific services, such as piloting, tugging, or port services, though these may not be levied more heavily on vessels from particular countries. Neither Iran nor U.S. is a signatory to the UNCLOS, but it is widely regarded as international maritime law, and Hormuz as an international strait. In 1968, Iran and Oman agreed on a traffic scheme with the International Maritime Organization under which major vessels would use sea lanes in the middle of the strait. Iranian mine laying during the war made such passage unsafe now, according to the IMO. Do others charge fees? No unilateral move to demand fees to traverse a strait was made in modern history, shipping industry officials said. Gulf states, whose main access to the high seas for their vital energy exports lies through the strait, are particularly concerned about fees. The Panama and Suez canals, which are human-made, are treated differently from naturally occurring straits. The Turkish Straits, the Bosphorus, Sea of Marmara, and the Dardanelles between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean are governed by the 1936 Montreux Convention, guaranteeing free passage for merchant vessels in peacetime. That allows Turkey to levy standardized charges to cover the cost of the services, but does not impose a general transit fee. Singapore does not charge a fee in the Singapore Strait. Returning now to local news. Public safety, Tony Reed writes, neighbor injured in fire rescue. A 33-year-old woman was treated in hospital for smoke inhalation after helping her female neighbor escape a house fire Saturday evening in the 400 block of West Sawyer Street, according to firefighters. Everyone was clear of the house when the fire crews arrived around 6 p.m. and found the building wreathed in heavy smoke. Fire crews initiated an interior attack and were able to bring the fire under control quickly after arrival, said a statement from Decatur Fire Chief Neil Elder. The chief and the blaze left three occupants. The chief said the blaze left three occupants homeless and they were being assisted with emergency housing and support services by the American Red Cross. Elder said the cause of the fire remains under investigation by the Decatur Fire Department and Prevention Bureau. And from Capital News Illinois, Ben Zielinski writes, state taxes on school supplies to be reduced. From Springfield. Parents starting on back-to-school shopping will get a temporary sales tax break for 10 days this month. From Friday, August 7th through August 16th, the state sales tax on school supplies will be reduced from 6.25% to 1.25%. Items with a lower sales tax will include traditional supplies such as markers and pencils, notebooks and folders, and other classroom items, as well as many clothing purchases. Parents will keep more of their hard-earned dollars while students will get what they need to start the school year off right, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in an event in Palatine to highlight the initiative. Clothing items, including shoes, that cost less than $125 will qualify for lower sales tax rates, while there will be no price limit on school supplies. All purchases will still be subject to lower sales tax, however. Local sales tax. The program cost the state $10 million, a minimal amount of the $55.9 billion budget. Pritzker blamed Trump for rising inflation, saying his policies have increased costs and made life harder for Illinois families. We can't control broader inflation in the economy, but there are some things that we can do to make life easier, Pritzker said. Launching into campaign mode with Election Day 3 months away, Pritzker said the sales tax holiday is the latest example of how his administration has tried to lower costs for Illinoisans. He pointed to initiatives to raise the minimum wage, provide food benefits for people who lost eligibility for federal support, and forgive medical debt. He also touted and legislation reforming insurance and banning hidden fees as other ways he saved Illinoisans money. The state tax holiday on school supplies is one of the two tax relief initiatives in the fiscal year of 2027 budget. Lawmakers also suspended the annual increase to the motor fuel tax until January 1st, which saves drivers about 1 cent per gallon. The budget also included hundreds of millions of dollars in new taxes, mostly on businesses, as lawmakers increased spending by less than 1%. The last time the state approved such a program was in 2022, the last time Pritzker ran for re-election. That concludes part one of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, August 5th, 2026. This is Kim Harden, and I will be back in a few minutes for part two, and we will open with the obituaries. We'll cover some sports, maybe a little history of the day, and probably hit on some more local stories. Thank you.